The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and joined by my co-host today, Nathan Glidewell. It's a sort of NFL free agency, Nathan, so we got some stuff to go through here, whether that be signings or trades. So let's hop right into it. With quarterback Russell Wilson planning to sign a one-year deal with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Nathan, the Steelers already have their, I believe, 2022 first-round pick at quarterback Kenny Pickett on the roster, but he got benched last season for Mason Rudolph. I know he was injured with his ankle injury, but he got healthy, and then he was cleared to play, but Mike Tomlin went with Mason Rudolph instead. He played, I believe, the last three games of the regular season, or the last two games of the regular season, and then played in the playoff game. Do you think the Steelers made the right decision here going after Russ? Or should they have let Kenny Pickett develop and can you start him a quarterback?
I really thought they should have let Kenny Pickett develop. I think that, you know, he's a young talent. He was never going to be this polished talent when he came into the league. And he still had a long way to go from where he was in college. And I just feel like he hasn't gotten a fair chance at this point in his career. And for them to go out and replace him with Russell Wilson has his own shortcomings at quarterback. We saw how much he struggled in Denver. Never really could put anything together. And honestly, I feel like there is a lot of similar issues between the Steelers and what goes on in Denver right now with the Broncos, with offensive line play, coordinators not doing as good of a job as they should. And for Russell Wilson to be in that situation, I feel like he also doesn't have like super great weapons. I mean, he has George Pickens and you can get down the list there. But it's very similar situations. And personally, I would have developed Kenny Pickett and I would have went young, but that's just me.
Yeah. I think Russ's best days are behind him, obviously with his age being on the wrong side of 30. I think he can be a serviceable starting quarterback, but I don't think he's going to win the Steelers a Super Bowl. I know the Steelers defense is really good with T.J. Watt and Alex Highsmith off the edge. They got some good interior guys. They're building up that DB room. They drafted Joey Porter last year, but I just don't think Russ has much left in the tank. I personally would have stuck with Kenny Pickett. Even though you look at Kenny Pickett's stats, and they're pretty bad, but I don't want to blame it entirely on Kenny Pickett. I mean, we saw his coordinator for his first two seasons being Matt Canada. Dude couldn't call an offense. It was basically just check down after check down, and then let's throw a deep ball to George Pickens here once in a while. So I don't want to blame on Kenny Pickett entirely. I think this will be somewhat good for Kenny Pickett to sit behind somebody like Russell Wilson, who has won a Super Bowl, who has done great things in his career, and sit behind him and learn what he can offer. Sort of what the Jets wanted to do with Zach Wilson, but it looks like they basically just kicked Zach Wilson to the curb now. I hope it works out for Kenny Pickett in the long run. After Russell Wilson probably leaves after 1 year, I don't think they're going to renew his contract after a year unless he somehow miraculously wins a Super Bowl or gets into the AFC Championship or something. I just don't see it happening. So hopefully Kenny Pickett takes this season to learn what Russell Wilson has to offer and learn the new offense under Arthur Smith, because I think he has the potential to be a good serviceable starting quarterback in the league. I think he's going to be some top five, top 10 quarterback, but I think he'd be good enough to help the Steelers to get to the playoffs year after year. Another quarterback we have leaving their team, quarterback Kirk Cousins is signing a four-year, $180 million contract with the Atlanta Falcons, leaving the Minnesota Vikings and arguably the best receiver in the NFL and Justin Jefferson hanging there. Do you think this was a smart decision for Kirk Cousins to go to the Atlanta Falcons, Nathan, or do you think he should have stayed with the Minnesota Vikings and continue to do great things with Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison now?
I really thought he should have stayed in Minnesota. I feel like he really had a lot of chemistry with the players there, and the front office really liked him. But for him to get to the Atlanta Falcons, I kind of look at the composition of the team. It's really towards the younger side, and they're bringing in a veteran quarterback. I know Matt Ryan was there a few seasons ago, and really he didn't have the best time being a veteran quarterback surrounded by a bunch of young guys. Is it a similar situation? I don't know how Kirk Cousins will perform, especially coming off an injury. And I really don't know how many more years Kirk Cousins has left in the tank, but for him to go and sign a four-year deal for that much money, good for him, but the Falcons, I'm kind of questioning, especially when you saw a Desmond Ridder on the roster. I know he's not the greatest quarterback, but he's young. He's still developing. And if you really wanted another quarterback that bad, I feel like he should have just looked in the draft. But, you know, Kirk Cousins, it's kind of surreal for his time to be done in Minnesota. I really thought that he would just finish his career there and not play for any other team.
Yeah. I don't like the decision for him to go to Atlanta because he had built a lot of chemistry with those guys. I think Minnesota was going to start investing more for agents this offseason than they did last year. They're already on the track right now. I believe they signed a couple defensive players to kind of bolster that defense. They lost a lot last season. But I look at what Kirk Cousins is going to get in Atlanta. He's going to get Bijan Robinson at running back, upgrade over Minnesota because they just released Alexander Mattison, who was supposed to be the next best thing in Minnesota. Drake London, I do not think he's an upgrade over Justin Jefferson, not even remotely close.
No.
But you look at Kyle Pitts at tight end. He hasn't had a quarterback most of his career. When he did, he played pretty good. So I think Kyle Pitts is going to be in for a great season. And that's an upgrade, I think. I think talent-wise, there was probably like T.J. Hawkinson. I do. I don't think T.J. Hawkinson is – he's coming off that pretty gruesome injury. And I think Kyle Pitts has a higher ceiling. I think a higher ceiling is a better term for
that. I would say not. He is not even close to the talent that T.J. Hawkinson is right now. But if you're talking like what he could be in the next 3 to 5 years, if he has the right quarterback, which if Kirk Cousins performs well and he actually passes in the ball, then I think Kyle Pitts can be the next great tight end. I mean, you're right. He has the talent. But as far as like proving it in his career, he has not had the chance to do that yet.
Yeah, well, when you have Taylor Heineke and Desmond Ridder throwing you the football, it's kind of difficult to prove much. And then additionally, you have Arthur Smith as your head coach and offensive coordinator. But then you look at the offensive line. I think the Falcons have one of the most underrated offensive lines in the entire NFL. Chris Lynchman guard is one of the best guards. They got a couple tackles, Jake Matthews, Caleb McGarry, I believe is still there. So I think that offensive line is an instant upgrade over the Minnesota Vikings. You look at the Falcons defense. Outside of having a lack of people that can get pressure on the quarterback, I think the DBs are pretty good. They signed Jesse Bates last year. He had a sensational season. I believe he picked off Bryce Young twice in one of the games I watched of Bryce Young last season. So he did pretty good things. Still got Grady Jarrett there. I think the defense, for the most part, is somewhat of an upgrade over what they have in Minnesota. But we'll see if that stands after this free agency signing period because Minnesota is really diving into that. I think Kirk Cousins instantly becomes the best quarterback in this division now. I know that's not saying a lot because you got Derek Carr and the Saints, Baker Mayfield for the Buccaneers, and then you got Bryce Young for the Panthers. So I think Kirk Cousins can get the Atlanta Falcons to the playoffs. It's just going to come down to can Raheem Morris in year one help get him there? And I think time will tell, but all in all, I'm not a big fan of Kirk Cousins going to Atlanta. Like you said, Nathan, I think
it doesn't make a lot of sense for the Falcons either. Because it's $100 million guaranteed on his contract, so they're just throwing money at him. Which for most teams, other than the Rams, isn't working out in the long run.
I mean, I kind of compare this to a situation similar to the Lions, maybe where the Lions, Jared Goff is not the greatest quarterback in the world, but the weapons around him, the defense, the coach. Does great things. I mean, Amon-Ra St. Brown, they got a two-headed monster at running back. The offensive line for the Lions is one of the best in the NFL, if not the best. The defense outside of some poor cornerback play last season was pretty good. So, and you look at the Falcons, very similar. You got Bijan Robinson at running back, Tyler Allgeier behind him, sort of two-headed monster there. Got some weapons at the receiver position. And the defense, I think, is very underrated, could be really good this season. So that's kind of how I compare the signing. Is you're going to get a quarterback to come in and sort of manage the game and lead this team further and further along and sort of jumpstart a rebuild, so to say. Because it's kind of hard to nail a quarterback in this NFL because we see with Bryce Young, I know it's early, but you look at Kenny Pickett for the Steelers. It's not looking great. Will Levis for the Titans. So to get somebody like Kirk Cousins, who's a proven winner, is a good thing for the Falcons to sort of get these young guys going under a new head coach. All right, so we got a couple of trades here, some Alabama players. The first one being the Denver Broncos trading wide receiver Jerry Jeudy to the Cleveland Browns in exchange for 2024 fifth and sixth round picks. Nathan, what are your thoughts on the Broncos finally trading Jerry Jeudy after it feels like three seasons of saying they were going to trade him. It was almost like the John Collins of the NFL, where it's like every year we're trading Jerry Jeudy, we're trading Jerry Jeudy, and then the trade deadline passes and Jerry Jeudy's still a different Bronco.
Yeah, this is a great deal for him to go and have another opportunity to play for the Browns alongside a former Alabama receiver, Namari Cooper, who had a stellar year last year. You also have David Njoku on that team. And I feel like there's a lot of talent on that team that surrounds him. You talk about Nick Chubb and then whoever the quarterback is, whether that be Joe Flacco or Deshaun Watson. Honestly, I couldn't tell you at this point in time.
Well, I would assume Deshaun Watson, considering he's getting paid like what? $200-something million over his contract.
I don't know. Joe Flacco, man. But Jerry Jeudy also gets a chance to compete. I think that's a big thing. There was not really any chance for him to play in a role in Denver. I feel like there was no like bound wide receiver one that they had. It was always just flip-flop every week. The passing game never really was consistent because of the poor offensive line play. Defense was also pretty poor. And now he actually gets a pretty good chance to compete on a very talented Browns team on both sides of the ball. For the Broncos at this point in time, you don't really have a bright future going ahead. But for them to be able to pull up fifth and sixth round picks for Jerry Jeudy, who didn't have the best time in Denver, was at least you got something. That's what I can say. But it was way more beneficial for Jerry Jeudy than I would say for the Denver Broncos.
Yeah, I think you put it correctly right there, Nathan. The Denver Broncos just got something for Jerry Jeudy. I mean, a fifth and sixth round pick for a former first round pick isn't a great look. I know the Panthers probably going to end up doing that with Brian Burns, but we'll see what happens there. That's a whole different story. But Jerry Jeudy, I have mixed feelings about Jerry Jeudy personally, just because every year I drafted him in fantasy football, and every year I was told this is going to be the breakout year for Jerry Jeudy, and he never broke out. So I have mixed feelings about that, kind of like Nathan has about Austin Eckler at running back. But I think the change of scenery is going to be beneficial for Jerry Jeudy to get to Cleveland to play with somebody like Amari Cooper and alongside Elijah Moore, who's going to be probably the wide receiver three there, and then David Njoku. We will see if Deshaun Watson can return back to form. Don't know if that's going to happen anytime soon or if it ever does happen, but the Browns get another weapon to bolster that receiving core, which has been pretty thin the past few seasons. So I like that trade for the Cleveland Browns, but the Broncos, man, huge L for them. I know Jerry Jeudy is going to go into a year where he had to pick up his option or not, but the fact he couldn't net like a third round pick for somebody who is considered to be one of the better young receivers in the NFL is a little bit mind boggling to me, but the Broncos had to get rid of him. I don't think they wanted to pay his option and keep him around anymore, especially since they're probably entering a rebuild here.
I would expect so, speaking of that, they have really no quarterback whatsoever.
I mean, they have Jared Stidham, I think.
we're calling that a quarterback now?
I mean, he was for Auburn.
Yeah, this is the NFL, Alex. So let's get a move on.
All right, moving on to another trade here. The New England Patriots traded quarterback Mac Jones to the Jacksonville Jaguars in exchange for a 2024 sixth round pick. Nathan, any thoughts, condolences, prayers for Mac Jones and his career thus far in this trade?
I just feel bad for him. I feel like he's always gotten a bad hand of cards. You look at his coordinators he had to deal with in New England every single season, Matt Patricia, Bill O'Brien. It was never really the best situation. He also hasn't had very good weapons. New England's always been a run first offense, so he's had a limited time to actually pass the ball. And when he has, he has no one to throw to. and it's not like it was a issue that he was just a bad quarterback. I think he made poor decisions at times, but so did Bailey Zappe when he came in. I feel like there was no good answer at quarterback. And for New England, it was just not seeing eye to eye. I heard several reports. I mean, we saw the reports that Mac Jones had lost the locker room. I don't know how true that is. But at the end of the day, I just feel bad for him. He deserved a lot more, especially after that rookie season he had where he was absolutely stellar. He made the Pro Bowl. He did the gritty in the Pro Bowl. But to expect for him to have that type of a start to his career, just to end up being traded for a sixth round pick. To get to bind Trevor Lawrence is very sad. I don't know how much playing time he'll get, but if Trevor Lawrence does go down, Then I think the Jaguars are actually in a pretty good spot. You have a very viable second option at quarterback. And hopefully Mac Jones can prove himself to be a starter again, and maybe he'll be able to go somewhere else. But right now his career is not looking great.
Like you said, Nathan, I feel bad for Mac Jones. I know he didn't make great decisions at times, but he had a great rookie season. Then he lost his coordinator, Josh McDaniels. He took the job at Las Vegas. And then he turned to Matt Patricia and Joe Judge, who Matt Patricia was a defensive coordinator, and Joe Judge was a special teams guy who was terrible in at New York for the Giants as their head coach. And then they go and Bill Belichick gets rid of those two guys, and then brings in Bill O'Brien, who we both know is an overrated offensive coordinator.
Don't remind me.
I mean, not very good at all. And that does not pan out either. So he's, like you said, Nathan, got dealt a bad hand his entire career. I think a change of scenery is good for him, especially whether it was a starting quarterback position or a backup. I think everybody knew that it was probably going to be a backup quarterback position if he were to go somewhere else. I think Jacksonville's a great spot. He'll sit behind Trevor Lawrence, who dealt with a lot of injuries last season. He got really banged up, left knee sprain, an ankle sprain, a concussion, and a shoulder injury to his throwing shoulder. So to have somebody like Mac Jones behind Trevor Lawrence is going to be very valuable. I think the backup quarterback position is arguably the second most valuable position in the NFL right now without the quarterbacks, the way they're playing out this past couple of seasons. So to have Mac Jones sit behind him and sort of fill in there if Trevor Lawrence were to go down again is big, because I think Mac Jones has a bright future in front of him if he gets the right coaches and the right players around him. And once his contract's up in Jacksonville, I don't think they pick up his option. He'll have his pick to go anywhere. And maybe I think we'll take a chance on him and say, hey, let's give Mac Jones a chance here and let him come compete for a starting quarterback job. I think he can do it. Like I said, I think the weapons around him are going to be key, because I just saw Alabama when he had guys around him that could actually catch a football and block the pass rushers. He was really good Heisman candidate. So The sky's the limit for him, I think. And it's a good chance to learn behind Trevor Lawrence and from Doug Peterson, who, as we've seen, is a master with backup quarterbacks like Nick Foles.
Yep.
Some other NFL signings, Nathan.
Get on the list. Go ahead.
All right, you got to buckle up here. This is just as recording this video today. This will obviously be updated throughout the week, and when we come back next week, we'll hopefully update it again. Running back Saquon Barkley signed with the Eagles, 3-year, $37 million. Running back Josh Jacobs to the Packers, Tony Pollard to the Titans, DeAndre Swift to the Bears, and then Antonio Gibson to the Patriots. Then you go to the wide receiver, Gabe Davis to the Jaguars. Some offensive line here, Lloyd Cushenberry III to the Titans. Tyler Biadasz to the Commanders, Jonah Jackson to the Rams. Switching over to the defense, defensive lineman Christian Wilkins goes to the Raiders. Edge rusher Josh Huff to the Eagles. Other edge rusher Jonathan Grenard to the Vikings. Edge rusher Dorrance Armstrong to the Commanders. And then some two safeties here, Darnell Savage to the Jaguars and Kevin Byard to the Bears. Nathan, any of those signings stick out to you as they're going to be very good for these teams going into next season?
Yeah, first one I look at, Saquon to the Eagles. I mean, you talk about the lack of a real running back one in Philadelphia last season. It was really running back by committee, and now you bring in Saquon Barkley, who is arguably one of the best running backs in the NFL. He's so injury prone. There's that. But the fact that he is able to have a really good chance to, you know, make the playoffs and have a successful season that year, I think is a bright light.
Jalen Hurts might steal his goal line touches.
I don't know. I don't know if they're going to find about that or not. That might need to be considered. But I really like the pickup for the Eagles, especially after losing DeAndre Swift. Saquon's a bulky guy, but he runs strong, but he's also very shifty. He's also very fast, and he offers a lot of support to any quarterback in the pocket. He can block pretty well. So I think it's a good pickup. Only time will tell how good it will be. Another one, Josh Jacobs to the Packers. Josh Jacobs, and he didn't have a great season last season, coming off being the rushing leader the year before. But for him to be able to go instead to a situation like the Packers, who have a pretty good offensive line, I felt like Aaron Jones was there. He could run the ball very well. I feel like there's similar players. And now Josh Jacobs gets another chance to really compete. I felt like with the Raiders, there was not a lot of good offensive line depth. I think that's one of the shortcomings for the Raiders. But now Josh Jacobs sets him to a new situation. It's going to be weird to see him wearing that green and yellow. I can't get behind that. But I still love him going to the Packers.
Yeah, I like those two signings as well. They fit their teams really good, plug some holes. Josh Jacobs probably going to fill for A.J. Dillon, who I believe is a free agent. And then Saquon Barkley replacing DeAndre Swift, who I think had a pretty good year. I just don't think their match was made in heaven for the Eagles and DeAndre Swift. Some other underrated signings for me, I think, were Lloyd Cushenberry III to the Titans. We've spent like the past 2 years dogging on the Titans offensive line, how bad it is. But I think Lloyd Cushenberry, who had, I believe, was one of the highest graded centers last season for the Denver Broncos, to come into the Titans to sort of plug that position is huge to sort of jumpstart the offensive line rebuild, because they got Peter Skoronski last season. I would hope they drafted offensive lineman this season. If they don't, a receiver, because they need a lot of help on that offense, especially for Will Levis. But I think Lloyd Cushenberry is a huge signing for them. So they don't have to waste another pick on an offensive lineman that they pray works out, and he doesn't. So that, and then you look at Christian Wilkins of the Raiders. Once again, a huge signing. The Raiders do not really have anything on the defensive line outside of somebody like Max Crosby. So to get him help, so he's not triple teamed every time he's rushing the passer, with a guy like Christian Wilkins, who's a stud, who really has broken out the last 2 years with the Miami Dolphins, is going to be a huge help for them. And once again, jumpstart that rebuild they're trying to do and give a lot of help to that defense that really did struggle last season. Nathan, once again, you look through the signings. You got any question marks or think signings that are just not very good?
I mean, you can make an argument for Kevin Byard to the Bears. I feel like Kevin Byard has not been as good since he's left the Titans. But the Bears do need depth at the safety position, so it's a good pickup for right now. Another one, Gabe Davis to the Jaguars. Gabe Davis hasn't really had he didn't have a stellar season last year, I feel like, and he's always been that wide receiver three that you expect to be big, and then he'll make big plays every now and then, but like the stats don't back him up. It's going to be kind of weird to see him to the Jaguars. But other than that, I feel like all these signings kind of benefit teams. But I feel like the one that sticks out the most is Antonio Gibson to the Patriots. I really didn't get why they kind of put all their beans in one bag. They got rid of Damien Harris and said Ramondre Stevenson's our running back one. And then they give him one season, and then they bring in Antonio Gibson. So it's like, what do they want to do with their future? It's really confusing. I don't know if they want to go back to running back up by committee. But at this point, Antonio Gibson has had a few good seasons and a few bad ones. So yeah, you don't really know what he's going to be able to do behind that Patriots offensive line that struggled a lot last year. So it's going to be kind of different, but that does mean Brian Robinson Jr. is really the running back one in Washington now. So it'll be fun to watch him at least.
Yeah. The signing I didn't like at all was a Tony Pollard to the Tennessee Titans, because Derrick Henry, he's not coming back. That's been reported, I believe. Probably by next week, we'll be sitting here talking about Derrick Henry signing with the Dallas Cowboys.
Well, you know, I'm here on Twitter updating every like 5 seconds, so you know if anything will happen.
But Tony Pollard to the Titans, just, I don't think he fits with their plan. I believe he's 26 or 27, and that team's rebuilding. And by 30, usually running backs are out of the league or they're turning downwards, and that's about three to four seasons left to Tony Pollard. And they have Tajay Spears at running back, who I think did a lot of good things last season behind Derrick Henry. I mean, I think he snapped Derrick Henry some games last season. So to come in and bring somebody like Tony Pollard to sort of take those snaps away from a guy who I think has a very high ceiling, I don't understand. It feels like a waste of $24 million. I feel like they could have just done better using a pick in the draft to draft a running back to pair alongside Tajay Spears, who fits that rebuild timeline where, let's say, Tajay Spears goes down or something, you have another young running back to come in and play behind him. I just don't understand Tony Pollard signing. It just does not fit their timeline. It doesn't make sense for the Titans. It doesn't make sense for Tony Pollard. I don't know why Tony Pollard want to go to the Titans, who, I'm sorry, are not going to be contending for the playoffs for at least a season, if not two seasons. So basically almost the entirety of his contract, where he could have gone back to the Cowboys and been in the playoffs every season almost, or gone somewhere else where they need a running back and qualify for the playoffs almost every season. The deal doesn't make sense for either side. I don't know what they were thinking, what his agent was advising him what to do. I don't think he watched DeAndre Hopkins last season, what he did, because he signed there hoping to do something, and that didn't work out either. So
that went out the window fast.
Yeah, awful trade for both sides. But for the most part, like you said, Nathan, I think a lot of these trades are benefiting these teams and sort of plugging holes that need to be plugged before the draft. And when we do our mock draft, these will definitely have a huge impact in what we're going to have teams picking. I mean, you look at Kirk Cousins, we probably would have had the Falcons taking a quarterback. Now, not so much. Minnesota Vikings, probably would have had picking a quarterback in the mock draft. Now we probably will, because they need it.
Mm.
All right, moving on to some college football, Nathan. Keep us updated if you see anything on Twitter.
I'm looking.
Some college football here. As you mentioned in one of our previous shows, the 14-team playoff is gaining some momentum and could roll in starting in 2026. The model that has earned the most discussion coming out of the meeting in Dallas is one that includes three automatic qualifier spots for the Big Ten and SEC, with the conference champions of those two conferences getting the only two byes, and then two automatic qualifiers for the Big 12 and ACC, and then one for the Group of Five. And that would leave three at-large spots. So that could be between the Big Ten, SEC, Big 12, ACC, have a Group of Five team sneak in there, whatever. Nathan, are you a big fan of this 14-team playoff format that sort of benefits the Big Ten and SEC?
I mean, no, not really. I feel like you got to give other conferences a fair opportunity, but I also can't sit here and deny that the SEC and Big Ten have been the two most dominant conferences for several years now. And for them to have an argument to have three automatic qualifier spots, I mean, it's a decent argument. I mean, they continuously put some of the best teams into the playoffs. The SEC, more likely than not, has a national championship winner in there, and they have several teams that are very close there in talent and in product. I mean, time and time again, Georgia and Alabama are just stepping up. And then you'll have another team in the SEC that makes a very good argument for being another third team that could be in there. So it's a decent argument, but I feel like the current playoff model with the 5-7, I feel like that works better. It's more equal. And if you're really one of the better teams, I feel like you should be winning your conference. And if you can't win your conference, then you definitely will be ranked high enough to be able to get in there. So the argument is really for more, hey, who can go through their conference and win a few games. I will use this for Ole Miss. I feel like Ole Miss is a great example, because Ole Miss is a team that probably wouldn't make the playoff 9 times out of 10 with probably the regular playoff we have now with the 14 playoff. And then we move over to the 5-7 model, where Ole Miss is probably not going to win the conference, but they could definitely be one of the teams that can sneak in there in the 12-team playoff and in the 7 at-large bids. But then you move into this model they're proposing, and Ole Miss would probably make it every single year the way this is set up. So it's built to give the SEC and Big Ten more of an advantage, and I don't think that's fair to the rest of the college football. So they need to stick with the 5-7. Can we at least play 1 year of the 5-7 before we start arguing about new playoff models? I feel like that's a bigger issue. Yeah. That we can't just be happy with what we have right now. We got to continuously talk. And you know, we already had those, you know, that this proposes 14 teams. So what's next? We're going to go 28. It's going to start with like March Madness out here, and the regular season will basically mean nothing, because I mean, at this point in time, it's just a gauntlet already. And just let the teams play this season first. That's the biggest thing.
I'm not a huge fan of expanding this every, like, we're at 12 right now, right? So we're going to go to 14. Well, like, and then, like I said, Nathan, we're going to end up at like 28, and we're going to end up with the March Madness bracket every season. I don't think it's feasible. I know they want to get the money out of this college football playoff as much as they can, but you just can't tell me that if we somehow get to the 2018 playoff, that the 28th team is going to somehow get to the championship there and play like a Georgia or an Alabama or a Michigan. There's just
the gap in college football compared to like the gap in college. The difference between college basketball and college football, there can be a skill gap that is very short, and some days just don't go your way. But with football, the amount of talent on one single team and the amount of consistency there is between, like you said, Georgia or Alabama, or like a group of five team like Tulane or someone like that, the gap is huge. And there's no way a team like that is going to be able to go from, let's say, the first round and continuously beat these good teams, good talented teams that have recruited better than them because of NIL. And then you're going to tell me they're going to reach the national championship and knock off a heavy hitter after playing whatever, three straight games. I just don't see that happening.
And then it kind of just like ruins the meaning of the regular season, because now,
exactly.
I mean, you lose one game, you're over there quivering your boots like, oh my God, are we going to make the playoffs or not? That was for the 4-team. Now, coming up with the 12-team playoff, you can probably afford to lose 2, 3, maybe 4 games, depending on what the rest of the NFL or the college football teams are looking like.
I would say you can afford to lose a solid 2 and still might be able to sneak in there. But 2,
yeah.
I mean, that's still 2 more than you really could afford to lose with the 4-team playoff.
Yeah.
So we've already gotten to this point where regular season means a little less. Hey, if Alabama goes and loses to these teams, you know what? They could still probably make the playoff. But we were talking about this last year. I mean, we'd be like, after that first loss, it'd be like, hey, they're cooked. They're done. They're not going to be able to do anything else. And they pick up that second loss. You know, you're at the point where you turn on the TV, you're not even following Alabama anymore because they're not even a contender in your mind. But with the 12-team playoff, yeah, more opportunities, I guess, but the regular season means less. What they're proposing with the 14-team playoff, you can go ahead and forget the regular season. I mean, who's going to watch that at that point? It's a sad time because going back to the BCS, just having the two best teams play, well, it felt like it meant more. Now we've gotten to this point where NIL is taking over, and money is power. And like it or not, the Big Ten and the SEC control the majority of it in college football. So, I mean, they definitely have a right to propose this idea, but it does not work in my eyes.
Yeah, I still like these continue to expand this model and sort of get to this March Madness type bracket. I'm not a fan of it. Like you both pointed out, the regular season is going to get diminished, the remaining of it. And it's just going to become, okay, well, we lose 2 games. That's fine. Which, you know, as a fan, that for the most part, that's okay. Cause hey, we lose 2 games, we can still make it. But it's like, wow, the meaning behind winning a football game is not going to be as big as it used to be. I mean, it's going to be like, okay, let's say we lose to Texas. Okay, that's fine. It's fine, not fine, but we can afford to lose that game. We can bounce back. Talking about some NIL stuff here, Nathan. In a little over a week when it was announced, more than 10,000 college football players have opted in for EA Sports College Football 25, which is set to launch this summer. This means EA has reached its goal for 87% of college football players opting into the game. However, one notable player that opted out of the game was Texas quarterback Arch Manning. And according to Orange Blood's Anwar Richardson, his reason behind his decision was he wanted to focus on playing football on the field. And then ESPN's Mark Schlaback added that Arch wants to wait until he was the guy at Texas to opt in. So Nathan, first off, with the 2,000 players opting in, what are your thoughts on that? Because there was a few people out there that pushed back on the fact that these players were going to opt in for this $600 and a free copy of the game, but we see now that they did. So what are your thoughts on this?
This is fantastic. 10,000 players. I mean, we're already set up pretty much. I mean, that's what, 87% of college football players. So we're already set up. It doesn't really matter. There might be a few key players missing, but who cares at this point? We have our game set up. And then they get to the second part of this. Arch Manning figured out that no one was paying attention to him anymore after his recruitment went through, and he's just been sitting third string with Texas Longhorns and says, you know what? This is a great way I can kick at some NIL right here. This is a great way. I'm going to sit here and say, I'm not going to be in the game because I want to focus on playing football on the field. Well, newsflash to him, he doesn't even get on the field to play football. So, you know what? I think I would have taken the deal just so my player in a video game could have gotten on the field to play actual football. This dude, man. And then he says he plans to wait until he's the guy at Texas to opt in. Look, I I don't know what Texas fan out there wants to use him at quarterback. That Quinn Ewers is still there. So I don't know why you would even bother playing with Arch Manning. But for him to basically just have this kind of PR stunt where he says, I'm going to generate this discussion and it for it not to be a popular decision because not everyone else in college football does it. It's just really a clown show. I thought we were done hearing about Arch Manning after his recruitment, but I guess not.
It's worth noting that he hasn't accepted any NIL money. I mean, he did the NIL deal with Panini to sell his trading card, but that was donated to charity when they sold it. So he hasn't taken any money, according to all these sources. So maybe he just wants to keep that going until he starts at the quarterback position for Texas. But I mean, if his name wasn't Arch Manning, we wouldn't care. If his name last name wasn't Manning, we wouldn't care if he opted in or opted out. That's just the thing. But I think they have 10,000 players already opting into the game is huge. I believe Reese Davis announced on his social media that there was going to be another opt-in window in April for the guys that didn't opt in during this window or don't opt in during this window. So they'll have a chance to opt in, and maybe we get to the point where it's 99%. That's a hope. I don't think we're going to get to that point. I would hope we get to something like maybe 90, 95%. That's more realistic at this point. And hopefully the majority of the stars are in the game. Like hopefully we have all the starting quarterbacks, basically all the starting players we can get. And it's just maybe the depth guys that are opting in, but that's a hope. We will see if all that comes to fruition. I'm just excited for the game to come out and to be able to play it.
Exactly. We didn't even have a game before.
Cause in the grand scheme of things, we can always just add in these players to the game. We can always add in Arch Manning to the Texas roster. It's not going to, we do it in Madden all the time. So it's not going to be that difficult to do it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, March Madness is coming up next week, Nathan, so we'll be hot on that, picking teams, making our bracket next weekend, and hopefully we will have Jeff messing Spiegel up. Back on the messing up, yes, hopefully we'll have Jeff Spiegel back on the show. He said he will be here, so we'll have him there. He'll help us fill out our brackets, help people listening fill out their brackets, because he probably knows a lot more about the stuff than we do. He does it for a living, and he's followed March Madness for, I believe, longer than we've been alive. So I'm glad to have his insight for us. So we'll be covering that next week. And if we have time, we'll sort of dive into any NFL signings we didn't get to today. So that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening and watching, Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.